From the land of the Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of May, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. It's USDA Report Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the numbers released from the United States Department of Agriculture. The supply and demand tables today included for the first time a look at the new crop figures and ending stocks. There is a 4-bushel yield surprise for corn. We'll hear about that and discuss it with AgMarket.net's Matt Bennett. We'll turn our attention to the weather forecast to see how it looks with Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather, and along the way, we'll check in with K.J. Johnson, the president of the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. K.J. was at yesterday's event in Kankakee, where President Joe Biden made some announcements related to the fertilizer industry, and we'll do all of that on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written and performed by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We'll start with the WASDE figures released earlier today by USDA. You can find the supply and demand tables on our website now at willag.org. Old crop corn ending stock still at 1.44 billion bushels. The average farm price at the gate for the whole of the season is $5.90. That's for the corn that's already in the bin. The first stab USDA has taken at the new crop shows that they project the size of the crop at 14.5 billion bushels. That's down 4.3% from last year. The corn yield is projected at 177 bushels to the acre, and that's 4 bushels below the weather-adjusted trend presented at USDA's Agricultural Outlook Forum in February. That number gave us a 1.36 billion bushel ending stocks. Compared to that 1.44 for this year and the 590 cash price, USDA says the average season's cash price for corn in the coming year will be $6.75 a bushel. Soybeans for this year at $14.40 a bushel compared to $13.25 last year. The ending stock's 310 million bushels, and that compares to the 235 million bushels of ending stocks we have for the current year. And wheat, this is a big number. $7.70 was the average farm price for wheat harvested last year. For the wheat harvested this year, $10.75 a bushel. Last year's ending stocks at 655 million bushels. This year at 619 million bushels. Now here's how those numbers impacted the trade in Chicago. July corn at $7.91.5, up 3 cents for the day. December up 17 1/4, settled at $7.53. That's the new crop. July beans 7 higher at $16.13 3/4. November new crop at $14.80.5, 8 1/4 higher. Bean meal down $1.90 for the day. The bean oil 93 cents lower. Wheat futures were up 65 3/4 in the July soft red at $11.78 3/4, and the hard red July finished at $12.70 a bushel, up 69 1/2 cents. Live cattle futures were down $1.87.5 at $132.77.5. The feeders at $166.52.5, $3.47.5 lower, and lean hogs in the June contract at $97.47.5, down $3.37.5. Crude oil for the day at $105.91 a barrel, up 20 cents. Diesel fuel 2 4/10 cents higher, $3.73 a gallon. And the gasoline on the RBOB up 9 9/10 cents at $3.78 3/10 cents per gallon. Natural gas at $7.75 3/10 cents, up 11 3/10 cents on this Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett is here to take a look at these numbers. Hi, Matt, thank you so much for being with us. First off, what do you think of the figures from USDA today?
Well, I thought it was interesting. I mean, in all honesty, I was surprised they used the 177 for the corn yield. While I would agree that it's been a challenging spring overall, you know, you've got to ask yourself why they would do that this early. Typically, you don't see a yield change from the Outlook Forum numbers in the month of May. It's almost always the Outlook Forum numbers. So, I don't know. Again, I can agree with it. I was just surprised that they did it.
So that gave us a 1.44 billion bushel carry in, no change there. A yield of 177 bushel the acre for corn. Production now under 15 billion bushels at 14,460,000,000, with a carry out next year of 1.36 billion. I think you were pretty close to that on your pre-report numbers. And a cash price at $6.75 for new crop corn. Those are the numbers all make sense to you at the end of this year?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, 144 could still be a little bit rich yet. There's no doubt that later in the year, cattle numbers will be lower. But as far as this marketing year is concerned, I think cattle numbers are still going to be good enough that, you know, it's going to be tough to see us not see a little bit of an increase in the feed demand versus what they're talking. As far as exports are concerned, we had another abysmal week of export sales. So I'm not totally surprised that, you know, they're thinking that those aren't going to go up. But, you know, either this year or next year, I've got to think that exports are going to flow the U.S.'s way in a better fashion than what the USDA is suggesting. They dropped 100 million off of next year's. You know, and with the adjustments they made lower as far as Ukraine's concerned, boy, it was really interesting to see the U.S. not affected more than that, first of all. And second of all, the world carry numbers still up at the levels that they're at. I happen to think their world carry numbers are maybe some of the biggest head scratchers.
Why is that the case?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that they're banking on a monstrous crop out of Brazil, and there's no doubt that that's had the makings, but the weather certainly isn't cooperating in the finishing of that crop. The dry season came on a little earlier than what was expected due to La Nina, and so there's no question that you're going to see that production nicked a little bit. Now, I think the USDA is also assuming that you're going to get a monstrous yield out of, I would say 177 would still, I mean, that's the all-time record, you know, and so maybe it's not monstrous, maybe it is, but regardless, they're still assuming pretty darn good production at a time when we're not even sure if we're going to get all the acres planted, first of all, and second of all, it's pretty tough to assume a big yield whenever you get such a slow start.
From Brazil this morning, CONAB said, you know, that crop, the corn crop's not so bad. And in their figures, they are, what, at total supply at 4.945 billion bushels. Ending stocks for this year down there at 409 million bushels. When the numbers came out, were you surprised that they at least didn't lower their corn numbers more than they have?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised, you know, especially with some of the folks we talked to down there that are in production. And so, you know, I don't know what the final number is going to be. Whenever I look at the forecast again today at noon, over the next week to 2 weeks, I mean, it does not look like they're going to get substantial rainfall in the heart of the Safrinha Corn Belt. So you've got to ask yourself, you know, how much of a difference is it going to make if they can't finish well? And so we really need them to finish well, because there's no doubt that not only U.S., but I think world carry numbers, when it's all said and done, are going to be significantly lower than what we're currently looking at.
And Brazil, by the way, putting up production number that's 23 million bushels bigger this month than it was last month. So now let's turn your attention to what's happening on the ground. Are producers very worried about these hot, dry conditions and crusting that's happening this week and getting a crop up and how much replant they might have to have?
Yeah, there's no question that there's a lot of folks asking for a rain now, same folks that were hoping for no rain here not so long ago. And so I kind of understand that. The heat has definitely brought these crops up pretty quickly and really gave them a heck of a lot of push. But at the same time, some of these soils that didn't get heavy rain, people were a little surprised that we ended up getting as hard as what we've gotten. A lot of that has to do with the fact that we warmed up so quickly with all the wind that we had. So yes, the ground's gotten harder than what we assumed it was going to get. Maybe a little shower this weekend wouldn't be a bad thing, but there's probably people that want to throw stuff at me through the radio that are trying to finally get stuff done. So I totally understand that as well. But certainly a rain would help people, at least in some parts of this area that we're in.
Yeah, any soybean fields you see struggling?
You know, I haven't been as worried about the beans as I have the corn. I haven't heard a whole lot of issues there, but at the same time, there's definitely a few of them that I've seen that didn't come out quite as quickly as what I was expecting. And so I'm sure that it's got to have something to do with it getting a little bit hard for sure. But my personal thought on beans, you know, a lot of times we plant 130 or 40,000 plants, and then if you end up with 100, it's not the end of the world. So hopefully everyone gets a good enough stand that they don't have to go back in and mess with them too much.
The market will turn its attention to the weather now, almost completely, along with Ukraine, I would suppose, maybe some inflation. The crop progress reports will make a big difference. What are your expectations, at least at this point? And I know it's a long ways out for Monday afternoon to see how far along we will be for corn planting. It was 22% last week.
Yeah, I think you go from 22% to pushing 50, maybe even a shade over. I don't know that it's going to be tough to get over 50 whenever the northern tier of the Corn Belt is sitting, quite frankly, and parts of Iowa are still wet. And I know that it's just hit and miss, but bottom line for me is that it certainly isn't going to be everyone and their brother rolling, but in the areas that you can roll, I know people are going to be putting long hours in and putting every piece of equipment to use that they can. So I would assume that we'll get 25-30% done this week.
Hey, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. By the way, his colleague Bill Biederman will join me on Commodity Week this afternoon, along with Logan Kimmel of Roach Ag Commodities and Aaron Curtis from Midco. You can hear that program in its entirety tomorrow on our home station, many of these stations over the weekend, and online tonight at willag.org. Yesterday, the President of the United States, Joe Biden, came to Kankakee, Illinois, to make some announcements related to the fertilizer industry. K.J. Johnson, the President of the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association, was on hand for the meeting and now joins us now. Thank you, K.J., for being here. Can you tell me about the announcements President Biden made, please?
Yeah, so the President didn't come to Kankakee yesterday. We were gracious enough to get an invite to come and then have talks with the President, but also with the administration about some of the fertilizer stuff's going on, and then with infrastructure, but inflation. But he had released that they are going to double the fertilizer incentive grant to do U.S. production here. USDA announced earlier in the year that they're going to do $250 million. The President announced yesterday that they're going to do another $250 million, so a grand total of $500 million for increase in domestic production of fertilizer here in the United States.
Well, I have some questions about this. Let's first put some context in play. We talk about Russia, China, some other places, Canada, as it's related to fertilizer. How does fertilizer move across the planet, and is there much production in the United States?
There is production here in the United States, a lot on the nitrogen. There is some phosphates and potash, but a lot of that is global. What we're seeing in Russia, the Ukraine war, Russia produces about half the natural gas for the EU, and the price has skyrocketed. So right now you're talking about $7.50, $8 for a cubic foot of natural gas in the United States. They were talking about $25 to $30 a cubic foot of natural gas in Europe. And if you go back to December 1st of last year, that hit $60 a cubic foot. So there's a lot of manufacturers that are over in the EU that just literally stopped production because there's no way that they could produce at that and try and sell it on the open market. It was just too high. The other thing that's going on, phosphates in China. The United States is not buying much phosphates out of China, but the rest of the world does. And why it's such a big issue is that China produces literally a third of the trade for all phosphates in the world. And when they have said that they are not going to export any at all, at least until July of this year, and that's been going over another 9 months, that has just thrown all kinds of monkey wrenches out here in the fertilizer markets.
You know, years ago, I traveled to Florida to Disney with my young children at that time. And about halfway between Orlando and Tampa, there's a phosphate museum. That's what I do when I go on vacation. But I don't recall that there's much activity, although I'm pretty sure there's phosphorus mines in Florida. Can we increase really what we're doing here in the United States?
We could. There is a lot of phosphates in Florida. The biggest thing, though, what we have seen, and just talking to my counterparts down there, is it could There'd be need to be some regulation changes, not as much on the federal level, but on the state level. But what I get from our friends down that way is, you know, the number one industry is in Florida is tourism. And they're going to protect that at all costs. To get a phosphate mine to be sited down there right now is going to be pretty tough. Is there a lot of conversations about that? Absolutely. There's also talking about expansion of building more UAN capacities. I know there's a lot of facilities that are looking to, you know, upgrade. I know, though, when we talked about 5 years ago when Weaver, Iowa built that huge UAN plant in Iowa, that was a five-year, $4 billion project, and that's just not overnight. So I think what they're trying to do right now is what's already in production, is there a way to ramp that up? Are those facilities running at 100%? Can we expand that production? But to just get a new potash mine or a new phosphate mine or then go into nitrogen and put in a new plant, that's not going to happen in the next 6 months. It's a long-term investment.
What, from the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association's perspective, do you see in the next 6 to 8 months going into the fall, particularly as it's related to anhydrous ammonia and availability of nitrogen and its price?
I think it's all, I mean, it's just watch the natural gas price. For every dollar cubic foot natural gas goes up, you can pretty much add another $32 on top of that price already. So we are very much watching what the natural price goes on, especially in Europe. We need those Europeans to get back on online to producing, because what's going on is if they're not producing in Europe, those European farmers aren't buying that. They're coming on to the world market where we're buying that same, you know, UAN, urea, or ammonia. We need that as much as possible. The other thing, I mean, it's a lot of trade stuff going on, just if we can get China to start releasing some of the phosphates. But the other thing is transportation. You guys have heard that the Union Pacific has told some manufacturers that they're going to start limiting rail cars. You know, that will be a huge detriment. We might be able to get it, but the price of just getting it to where it needs to be could be driven up. So we are working. That's one of the biggest issues that we're working on. But also, you know, in the fertilizer, we're just in the retail business right now, trying to find truck drivers. I will tell you, that's one of the number one concerns that we see through our association, is just trying to find truck drivers.
Hey, thank you. Anything else before I let you go?
No, I appreciate it, Todd. Everybody just have a safe spring and just watch for those planters and those floaters going down the road.
That is good advice, KJ. Thank you so much. KJ Johnson is with the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. Mike Tenner from T-Storm Weather, you can find them online at tstorm.net, now joins us to take a look at the weather forecast here in the Midwest, across the planet, some of the other growing regions as well. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. Let's start in the United States. Farmers are moving at this point. I'm wondering how many open days you think they'll have and if there's any rainfall in the forecast for parts of the Corn Belt.
Well, there certainly is rain in the forecast because we do have some systems that are going to move through. Those will develop some showers this weekend and early next week. We're not looking for a lot of rain, but a quarter of an inch to three quarters of an inch, depending on the location. And most of that will start up tomorrow and Saturday, and then end Saturday and Sunday. So just kind of a mixed bag here. Not a lot of rain, but a little bit to keep things going. The only exception to that will be in the northern growing areas. The Dakotas and Minnesota received a lot of rain over the last several days. It's going to take a while for them to dry out and start planting again. And they'll even see a little bit of rain over the next few days. So, Todd, some rain's moving through over the next 3 to 4 days. Once we get beyond them, the storm pattern does ramp up a little bit. We have a jet stream that's going to line up across the central U.S. And that's going to happen as we get warm air to the south of Illinois and seasonable air to the north. And that'll set up a clash zone right across the Corn Belt. And that's a pretty good formula for showers and storms. That all starts up Monday and Tuesday and then continues in some fashion beyond then. So once we wrap all of this up, we think we're going to see some decent rains as we move through next week and then into the following week after that. Now, this isn't some crazy type of weather pattern where we receive heavy rain and flooding, maybe outside of the Dakotas, but it is going to be wetter than it has been over the last several days. So kind of a mixed bag for planting. Not an ideal setup, that's for sure, but not entirely problematic. I think it would be best if we just saw a nice drying window for another 7 to 10 days and then started to see rains after that. But the rains are going to start up before we get there.
Growing degree days have been piling up quickly with the very high temperatures abnormal for this time of the year. Will they stay with us?
Well, it'll stay mild, but it's not going to be this mild. The level of warmth we're seeing at the moment is pretty unusual, with highs in the 90s and lows in the 70s. That's even warm for the middle of July across the Corn Belt. So this is an anomalous air mass that we're dealing with at the moment. Now, you have to keep in mind that it was very cool as recently as 5 to 6 days ago, and that pattern had been in place for the better part of a month. So what we're seeing now is kind of only bringing us back to normal. And in fact, we won't even get back to normal for the last 30-day period because it just was so cool a few weeks ago. But once they get beyond this weekend, it does stay mild with high temperatures in the 70s, maybe even 80s at times. But we're not going to be looking at these 80s and 90s like we've seen lately.
The other place I'd like you to check in for me on is in Europe. There are some worries there, at least beginning, I think, because of recent past droughts they've had, about the weather forecast being hot and dry for some regions there, especially for wheat production.
Yeah, the bigger concern for their region is just that they haven't had very much rain for a while. Initially, this was centered on France, and France is the number one producer of wheat in the European Union. And keep in mind that France alone produces considerably more wheat than the United States as a whole. So this is a big major wheat producer. And that area was pretty dry over the last several months, and it looks to stay dry going forward. The thing that's become a little bit more problematic over time is that the dryness story across France has expanded eastward to include Germany and Poland, and then it's also extended up into the UK. And that's a major wheat producer, and arguably the wheat producer of the world is right there. And with not much rain in the forecast, as we get through next week and then into later on in May, we're going to need to see some pretty good rain or this story will become more of a topic. Now, the reason it's not a major topic yet is simply because what's happening off to the east with rains. We saw some pretty good rains in the Eastern European Union, also in Ukraine and Russia. And in a normal situation where we weren't having a war and all that, it would actually be a really nice setup for Ukraine and Russia with cool weather and wet weather to this point. And it looks to stay pretty cool at the moment for another week or two. And that's as the wheat crop moves through reproduction. So, you know, kind of a mixed bag there where, you know, Western areas of France and Germany and Poland have a problem. Eastern areas, not so much. But all in all, that's certainly something to watch as you move through May.
Hey, thank you very much.
Yep, great being here.
We'll talk with you again next week. That's Mike Tenuri. He is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net. Taking a look at weather and yield forecasts from his perspective, you can always contact him there at tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.